Philippians chapter 1 and verse 6 is how we began our time together in reflection on that verse. And I'm going to get to that here in just a few moments. But I want you to consider this thought with me this morning. You have what you need to serve God. You have what you need to serve God. Maybe you have circumstances in your life that would maybe drive you away from that. Maybe there's just a discouragement, a family background, something in your life that for some reason you think that might hinder you. But I want you to know today that God has equipped you exactly with what you need in order to serve Him. This morning I want to consider here the sufficiency of God's grace. And I'm thankful that comprehensively speaking, that touches all of our lives here today. And I want to share it from the perspective of my story. My life changed in a quarter of a second on January 13, 1999. Growing up, I trusted Christ as my Savior as a five-year-old boy in children's church. As the Lord would have it, that's the same church now that I am the pastor at. Thankful for His goodness and His grace, but as a five-year-old boy, I recognized that the fact that I was a sinner, and God worked in my heart to lead me to repentance, confessing sin and trusting in Christ and Him alone as my personal Savior. As a young boy, I lived really probably the best way to describe it as the all-American boy dream. Had my own paper route growing up, had my own little lawn mowing business. I was very much involved in athletics. Basketball, baseball, soccer, track, football, cross country, you name it. Whenever the season came around, I was there and I was ready to participate and play and loved that aspect of life. As a senior in high school, not too far removed from where you folks are at, as a senior in high school, God began to work in my heart and to impress upon me the opportunities to be able to serve Him in full-time capacity. And so I went away to school to study for ministry. Wasn't sure exactly what that would look like, but whatever God's will was, I was willing to do that. It was there in freshman speech class that I would meet my future wife. How do you guys like to think about that? I was scared to death of freshman speech class. And the thought of trying to impress a teacher for a grade plus this girl that I'm trying to impress as well was just too much for me. And so I waited until after that semester, but the Lord allowed me the opportunity to get to know Sarah. One thing led to another, and it just became apparent that it was God's will for my life to pursue marriage with her. And so sure enough, we made plans, we became engaged. The thought after graduation was that my wife would teach there locally in the area. I would go back to seminary where I would finish up a one-year master's degree. And then our plan was to serve God in full-time ministry. Life was good. For me to sit down and to just script this out, I could not draw it out better. I was so happy with how God was leading and directing there in my life. After that first semester, it had been a good one, both for Sarah, for me. Right at the start of the second semester, on a Wednesday night, I went over to Sarah's apartment. We had dinner together that night. We went to church that evening. Coming back after church then, we spent some time together just in reflection on our upcoming wedding, which was about 6 months away at the time. We also just started talking, just catching up. One of the best parts of the relationship that I have with my wife is just the ability to just talk. And thankful for those opportunities, even in college, to be able to do that. Just talking and getting to know each other. And that night, we had an interesting conversation, and it centered around cancer. There was a family in my church at the time that was going through a recent cancer diagnosis. And the question that we were asking each other was, what if it was God's will for one of us to be diagnosed with cancer someday? How would we respond to that? We knew all of the right answers. We'd grown up in Christian homes. We'd been in church. We knew that God would be there for us, and none of that would happen apart from His will. We referenced that and testified to that fact together and had a great conversation. Just even in that conversation alone, there was a togetherness and a bond that formed even more deeply. But little did I realize that that conversation would mean so much in just a matter of minutes. We said our goodbyes, and I was on my way back to campus. It was about an 8 to 10 minute drive. I pulled up at the red light, getting ready to make a left-hand turn, when the light changed from green to yellow and then to red. For a split second, I thought, hey, I can slip through here and get on campus. But deciding to play it safe, I slowed down, I stopped, I put my car in neutral. I glanced down at the clock. It was about 10:45 at night. I looked down the road, and there was a car coming toward me. Really didn't think that much about it. Looked away, looked back up just in time to realize that that car was about to run the red light, was going to go right through the red light, and sure enough, he did. Just as he went through the red light, a car coming the other way was making a right-hand turn, who had the right-of-way. Those two cars collided, and then the car that had run the red light swerved and hit me in the driver's side door. It hit my car, sent my car spinning, and finally it came and rolled to a stop. First time I'd ever been involved in a car wreck. You know, it was startling to say the least. I could look in my rearview mirror, which was just hanging ajar now just from the impact. And I noticed a small trickle of blood from my forehead. Out of the left corner of my eye, I could actually see the asphalt in the road, which told me that this was a pretty significant wreck. The door had been opened as a result of the car wreck. I also at that time realized that my car was still idling. The motor was still on. I made the conscious effort to do something that I could so easily do just seconds before. I made the conscious effort of trying to take my right arm to turn the key to turn my car off when nothing happened. I tried again a second and a third time to again do what was so effortless just moments ago, and still my body would not respond. I then started to feel this burning sensation about mid-chest and below. It almost felt as if my body was on fire. But I kept looking down. There was no fire. Still, I had that small trickle of blood. I had heard of people becoming paralyzed, but surely God would not allow something like this to happen to me. Even in trying to stand up to get out of the car, again, to make efforts at moving my arms, nothing would happen until finally my right arm, after trying for about 10 seconds to move my arm, my right arm fluttered up and then just collapsed back down into my lap. My thoughts were, how could a good God do this? I could see the man that had hit me. He was up, walking around, surveying the damage to his vehicle. There started to be a real anger that started to build up in my heart. About the same time, even moments before that, a former classmate of mine in school, he was also on public safety. He came racing out to the car when he saw the wreck. He saw that it was me and sat there with me in the car until the emergency crews could arrive. I kept asking Brian over and over again, am I paralyzed? How come I can't move? Brian did the best he could. Brian said, look, you've been involved in a serious car wreck. We're going to get you to the hospital. They're going to check you out. Everything's going to be okay. Even as he said that, I knew it wasn't going to be. And the anger just continued to build up in my heart. My justification for that, my rationale was, God, look, I'm trying to serve you with my life. God, I believe that you're calling me into ministry, and I'm studying for that. That night, I'd been to church. I was trying to have a godly relationship with my fiance. I mean, even on my list, I had said, look, I even stopped at the red light. You know, I could have rolled right through there. I mean, I had my list. I had my list. And sitting there in the car, God began to convict me. God began to work in my heart. And I confessed that there in the car. The only movement I had was to be able to bow my head in prayer. And that's exactly what I did. I bowed my head and I asked for God's forgiveness there for not trusting Him. And I asked that He would give me the strength and grace necessary, if possible, to bring glory to His name through these circumstances. The Scriptures describe a peace that passes all understanding. And there, in that wrecked vehicle, with emergency crew responding and trying to cut me out of the vehicle, God gave an incredible peace in my heart. People have asked me before, at what was the turning point in this whole journey for you? I mean, I still have my bad days. I really do. But God's grace is sufficient. His grace is sufficient. But I tell people that it was right there in the car at that moment where God did a work there in helping me to understand Him and to trust Him in these circumstances. You know, the EMS crews responded. They took me to the hospital. At this time now, Sarah has been notified of the car wreck. My wife Sarah, has an incredible, just a precious testimony of how God was at work there in her heart through all of this. And she shares the story of how the hospital called her and told her that I'd been involved in a wreck and that she would need to come down and pick me up. Is the way they put it to her. Well, when she got to the hospital, her roommate, she rode with her, and they got to the hospital probably about 1 a.m., 2 a.m., and they took her to a room, and they said, no, you're not going to be taking Bobby home. He's paralyzed because of this car wreck. Imagine hearing that your fiancé now has had this type of accident, and yet God did an incredible work there in her heart at those very moments as well. There in the hospital, they ran numerous scans and x-rays and determined the level of injury. And then after reconstructing the accident, they were able to determine exactly what had happened here. When the car hit me in the driver's side door, it crushed the side of the car in. As the side of the car was pushed in, the B pillar, which is right behind the driver's side window connected to the roof of the car, it was also pushed in, causing the roof of the car to come down. And so even though I was wearing a seatbelt that night, upon impact, I was coming up in the seat while the roof of the car was coming down. The roof came down on my head, breaking one of the vertebrae in my neck and dislodging another. So they determined that I'd suffered a C5, C6 spinal cord injury. As a result of that, it was important for them to do surgery and then to begin rehab as early as possible, as soon as possible, in order that I might be able to get the most mobility back. So they did that, and I began my therapy. I was there at the hospital in Greenville, South Carolina, for about a week. Then they transported me down by ambulance to the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia. This was a hospital that centers on helping people with MS and with spinal cord injuries. Now, maybe you're a little bit familiar with what rehab looks like. You know, maybe you've seen it, maybe you've had it in your own life in some way, or watched a parent go through that. We kind of get these thoughts here that rehab is, you know, you sit up at the side of the bed and then you walk the hall and you have these exercise routines that you go through. For me, rehab involved learning how to do this again, to be able to move my wrist. When I was able to do that, they started with my left hand, the exact same thing, learning how to move my left wrist. When that happened, those were big deals. You know, they celebrated those victories. They would attach these flotation devices to my arms with wheels. They would put me in front of a desk, and they would order me to move my arm back and forth. I couldn't do it. My therapists would be yelling at me. It felt like military, trying to get me to move my arm. And finally, You know, through effort, I was able to make that moving motion again. Then they started on my left arm. That's what my therapy looked like. They had to teach me again how to bring a fork to my mouth. On one occasion, I took the fork, and lacking some of those fine motor skills, I poked myself in the eye. And I thought, great, now I'm going to be a blind quadriplegic. But God's grace was sufficient even through those days. The Shepherd Center is an interesting place. They do an incredible work there. It's a noble effort, but it's also a very dark place. It's a place where people come from all over the country, and they've had life-changing accidents. The stories that I could go through here this morning, it would shock you to hear of people suffering spinal cord injuries, doing just some of the basic routines of life. A grandmother going out to her mailbox and slipping on the ice. A 16-year-old riding a four-wheeler and falling off the back. Someone that got caught up in a gang in Baltimore and was shot and the bullet lodged in their spinal cord. It was those types of stories, and there were multitudes of those stories. And it was not uncommon to go through those hallways and see family just weeping outside the door of their loved ones. It was a good place, but it was also a dark place. You could just feel the oppressiveness of just life and the lack of an answer to the circumstances that they were facing. That verse that we read earlier and that I asked you to reference as I began my time here, Philippians 1:6, is a verse that meant so much to me in those dark hours. That verse was taken and photocopies were made. And it was put on all three walls of my room. And so regardless of how I was positioned in my bed, I was able to look at that verse and to meditate upon those words. Being confident of this very thing. Now let's just stop right there. What are you confident in today? Are you absolutely guaranteed of being able to finish up a four-year degree here and to leave and then to serve God to an old age? No, not really. Are you guaranteed to go through life with perfect health, never to have issue for treatment or doctor visits? Not necessarily. Are you guaranteed to finish out life this week? No, you're not. My point is that there really aren't many guarantees in life. And so when the scriptures say, being confident of this very thing, that's something that we need to take note of. You know, that's something that we need to observe and carefully apply to our lives. What does the verse say? Being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun the good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. That verse has been used to describe an eternal security that we have, that no man can pluck us from the Father's hands. That verse also has referenced the sanctification of the believer. Paul is indeed referencing salvation because he does similarly in the same words in Galatians chapter 3. He which hath begun the good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. So do you understand where the promise lies for you today? As a child of God, he is bringing circumstances into your life for the purpose of conforming you into the image of his Son. We know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose, is what Romans 8:28 says. But God, right now, very personally, very individually, very specifically, is bringing circumstances into your life. Is that designed to just frustrate you with no intention at all? Or are those the results of just simply a sin-cursed world in which we live? I'm happy to tell you today that God is purposefully at work in your circumstance for the purpose of conforming you into the image of his Son, Jesus Christ, and to develop a character in you to the point where you have the whole allotment of what God would intend for you to have in order that you can serve him more faithfully. What a thought. And so it's not aimless. It's not just a fatalistic mentality, thinking, well, just, you know, Genesis 3, sin-cursed world, here I am. I'm going to just have to bear it up and grin and bear it. No, God is directing things into your life in order that he can grow you and mold you and make you into what He wants you to be so that you can serve Him with your life. Now, my question to you is, will you embrace that? Will you embrace that? Because many don't. Many don't. Many get bitter. Many grow frustrated. Many see the circumstances in their lives, and they think similarly to what I said earlier. Why would a loving God do this? You know, why would a loving God make me hurt like this? And yet, Hebrews 12 even tells us, as a loving father at times that has to chasten their children, at the present it doesn't seem joyous, but nevertheless it yieldeth forth the peaceable fruits of righteousness. That's God's position as one that would chasten. He is a loving father to you as His child. And Philippians 1:6 says, from the point of salvation until either when He comes back to this earth or when you die, circumstances are going to come and they're done for the purpose of making you into the image of His Son, Jesus Christ. It could look different for you. Maybe it's not physical. Maybe it's some sort of relational issue. Maybe being here on this campus is just a relief because of the home life in which you come from. Do you understand that God has put you in that family, in those environments and circumstances, giving you an opportunity to be able to trust Him in that and to rest in the strength that only He can give? Maybe you're here and maybe the issue's academic. Your roommate, he doesn't even open his books and he gets straight A's, and you study all night and you get a C+, and he thinks it just doesn't seem to be fair. Or maybe you're in the midst of a semester right now that's just steamrolling. And you're thinking, boy, I'm not going to make it this time. Can you understand these circumstances from God and trust in the grace that He has given you for these moments? These are lessons that I had to learn. And I'm able to come back and report to you. 20 years into this now, almost 20 years, God has been good. He has been faithful every step of the way. You know, there at the Shepherd Center, there were good days and there were very bad days. I was given hope that maybe I would be able to walk through this experimental medicine called Cygen. It had been proven to work on some people that had been recently injured and had been paralyzed. There had been a football player earlier that winter, a year and a half ago, that had suffered a football injury, was paralyzed. Dennis Byrd was his name. He was given this, and he's able to walk. He was able to walk again. And so the doctor said, look, where you can take this medication, but there is a side effect. You could develop blood clots, and if you do, then we have to take you out of the program. Are you willing to take that risk? Well, I had it all planned out in my mind. I thought, this is how God is going to have it. I've been paralyzed. I'm going to go through this regimen of medicine, and I will be healed, and then I'm going to have a neat story to be able to tell people. I mean, I already had it all worked out in my mind. I took the first dose of that. Guess what happened? Developed a blood clot. That was a hard day for me when that happened. It really felt like life to some degree had come to an end. I remember for the first time, with the help of a patient lift, going from the bed to the wheelchair, the motorized wheelchair sitting next to me. And it just hit me. I thought, that's what it's going to be like the rest of my life. That's what it's going to be like. That was hard for me at first. As one that was so active and involved in life, it was hard for me to accept. But God is faithful. His grace is sufficient. If I could fast forward through, and there's so many details, so much of this story I could share with you. Nuances, areas of forgiveness that God worked in my heart, areas of trust and dependence, that the lessons that He taught me. While all of this was taking place and I was going through therapy, my fiance and I at the time still had our wedding date of June 19th on the calendar. The question here now in March was, what's going to happen here? Are we going to be able to keep this wedding date? Sarah and I wanted to. My parents did not want me to. My parents wanted me to continue in therapy, and maybe in a couple of years, if Sarah and I were still in love, maybe then we could get married. But they wanted me to focus on my health and on my recovery. Sarah and I tried as much as we could to respect that and to honor that. And we made that a matter of prayer. But you need to understand, we had so many obstacles. I mean, would I be able to go back to work? Where? Could I go to school? How could I go to school and work? Would Sarah be able to work? Could Sarah care for my needs? Where would we live? What kind of vehicle would we be able to afford? And what would everyday life look like? I mean, the obstacles were just, it was from a human perspective, it was insurmountable. And yet God answered every single one of those very directly, to the point where he changed my parents' wishes and desires there. And they said, look, if you believe that this is God's will, we will support you 100%. And God, by his grace, allowed Sarah and I then to be married on the wedding date that we had picked then, before the car wreck. Boy, I'm thankful. You know, I'm a blessed man. Sarah could have walked away from that marriage, that engagement, with the thoughts of marriage. I saw that happen there at the Shepherd's Center. I've heard of that happening. And yet God, he's been faithful in allowing us now over 19 years of marriage. God has blessed us with 3 children. Grace is 11 years old. Daniel is 9. Andrew and I share a birthday. He's 5 years old. God has been good. God has allowed me the opportunity to serve him in ministry. But I'm thankful for the circumstances that he brought into my life to show areas in my heart that had not been conformed to the image of Jesus, that needed a car wreck like this in order for me to understand him, to trust him, and to depend upon him. You're going to face situations in life. Maybe at this point, life has been pretty easy. How are you going to respond when difficulties and trials come? In God's providence, he orchestrates every single event in your life. Nothing happens by chance. Nothing is accidental. Nothing happens without a specific purpose and a specific plan for God for you. Whether you're handicapped or healthy, married, single, God's desire for all of us is that we would look like his son, Jesus Christ. I think of Paul's testimony in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. A thorn in the flesh is the way the scriptures describe that. There in the scriptures, Paul asks, the scriptures say 3 times that this thorn in the flesh might be removed. We're not given great detail. I think that the chapter there may give us some insight on what that could be, but I think ultimately we're not for certain what that was, and I think that that could be on purpose. It allows us the opportunity to be able to make personal application to our lives. What might the thorn in the flesh be in your life today? Well, 3 times Paul asked that that would be removed. And what was God's answer to that? God's answer to such a sincere prayer request offered up by Paul was no. What was Paul's response to that? Do you see Paul there in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 saying, hey, if you're not going to deliver me from this, then you can forget about that next missions trip. Or I am going to go ahead and shut it down, and I am going to just go ahead and just deal with what you've given me here in my own strength. That is not Paul's testimony. What is Paul's testimony? Paul there recognizes that God's grace is sufficient. He says there, in reference to God, he says that my strength is made perfect in weakness. His response is, therefore, most gladly, will I go through this, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Does this sound like the story of a man that is just going to passively take this and fatalistically live the rest of his life? No, not with those words, most gladly, because he tasted of his God, and he saw his God as good, and he understood that no meant that God had better opportunities and better plans for his life. And so Paul embraces that. That became a defining mark of Paul's ministry. And it was Paul that penned the verse that we looked at today, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun the good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. You know, if I could back up just a little bit in my story and share this with you. And yet again, I found myself in a freshman speech class. This time it was Fundamentals of Oral Interpretation. This was the second semester of my freshman year. We had to do a project. And I picked the topic of trials. And there we had to use different pieces of literature to put together a theme and then to present it before the class. And I did that. I picked the topic of trials. I had several different pieces of literature that I used. I used the book of Job. I also used a book called More Precious Than Gold. That's the story of my pastor at the time, John Vaughn, whose wife Brenda and daughter Becky had been severely burned in a house fire. Becky, playing with a gasoline can, turned it over in the utility room, and it spilled out into the kitchen and ignited. And the mom, Brenda, went into the fire to pull Brenda out, and they both staggered out into the front yard and were severely burned. But they wrote a book that testified of God's grace as sufficient for them. You know, I read that book as a part of my speech, and I gave my speech, and I would have gotten an A, except I did then what I'm about to do now. I went too long. And so instead of getting an A, I had a B+. Well, trust me, as a freshman, hating to give speeches, I was fine with that. I was ready to move on, but God wasn't. As a freshman, God began to impress upon me this thought. Would you be willing to go through some sort of trial so that I, God, could be glorified? My answer to that was no. God, let me serve you in whatever capacity you would have. You know, God, let me go to the mission field. Let me serve you as a pastor or a Christian school teacher. Lord, I'm not willing that I would go through some sort of life-changing trial. Just to show you my immaturity here, I just knew something bad was going to happen. I would wake up every morning with that thought in my mind. I would go to sleep with that thought. As I would walk the sidewalks to classes, that thought would be impressed upon my mind. I couldn't read my Bible for personal devotions without that thought hitting me. I just knew something bad was going to happen. Finally, in a spirit of brokenness, just of complete brokenness, I found myself yet again confessing sin before God. And this time it centered around not completely giving my heart to Him. I thought I had done that. And yet there were aspects that God was uncovering in my life. And by the way, on a side note, guess what? The rest of your life, God's going to be uncovering areas that need to be broken and that need to be submitted to His will. And I want to encourage you to begin now embracing that. But as a freshman and as just a spirit of brokenness, I yielded. I said, God, whatever Your will is for my life, I'm willing to do that. Again, highlighting my immaturity here, just expecting something bad to happen. I thought maybe a piece of space debris would fly out of the sky and hit me. And I'd think, yep, there you go. That's the trial that you would have for me. And now we got it over with. And yet the bottom line is that even through our marriage, we've had trials. You'll have trials through life. How are you going to respond? Are you going to submit? Are you going to trust God in those? Are you going to recognize that His grace is sufficient? Please understand with me here today that our view of God isn't this. It's not as if on January 13th, 1999, God lost sight of me, only to have to scurry through the streets of Greenville to come upon the scene of an accident, and at that moment to find out it was Bobby McCoy. It's not as if God thought, look at how I have failed Bobby. Because I wasn't there, Bobby had this car wreck, and you know, I guess now I'm relegated to second and third options here for Bobby's life. And maybe I'll do the best I can. That is not the view of our great God that I would share with you today. The view that I would have of who God is as it relates directly here to my personal testimony is this. Before I was even born, part of God's plan for me involved walking on this planet for 22 years, and unless he chooses to do otherwise, to spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair. God's plan for my life involved just that, and it was purposeful, it was intentional, and it came from a loving God to where I would be able to see more of his greatness and his goodness in my life. And it would give me then an opportunity to be able to serve him with my life as I would yield to him. That's the view of God that I want you to see. One that is loving, one that is great, purposeful, and good every step of the way. He has been faithful. I could keep going with ways in which he has provided. I drove here. I've got a vehicle that I'm able to drive. I've shared my family. You've heard about the ministry. For me, life did not come to an end that day. But I look at it as an equipping, understanding his plan to conform me into the image of his son. I wake up every morning to the reality that I have limitations. I am tempted with thoughts of God, I could serve you better if I wasn't in a wheelchair. I'm hit with that often. I get frustrated sometimes when I'm trying to pick up a piece of paper. And I think, you know, my three-year-old can get a piece of paper back in the day, you know, and pull a piece of paper off. And yet I would wrestle with it. And finally, I'm able to get it. I have some finger movement, but it's not perfect. I hit those limitations. I wake up every morning with the understanding that I'm going to need help in getting ready to get back into my wheelchair. But God's grace is sufficient. And I want you to be encouraged here this morning. Taste and see that the Lord is good. We look at the story of Joseph, and we read through Genesis 37 through 50. And how long does it take us? Maybe 20 minutes, 20, 30 minutes, maybe a little bit longer if you're purposeful and trying to read through that. And yet we fail to understand that that could have been about 20 or 30 years of Joseph's life that is uncovered. And so when you see him in jail, and then the next chapter, you know, he's not in jail, or he's sold into slavery, and then the next chapter he's out and seems to be thriving, we lose time perspective there. And we fail to make the applications when we're into our third year of difficulty. And we think, when is this going to come to an end? And yet Joseph's life was marked by separation from family, growing up in a foreign land, and being dealt injustice left and right, from false accusations to just being forgotten about in prison. We get the flyover version, and to some degree, that's what my testimony is that I wrap up 20 years of my life in 30, 35 minutes. But boy, if I could give you a forward look here, God has something special for every one of you. If you don't know him as your Savior, would you submit to him and repent of your sin and cry out to him that he would save your soul? And then would you embrace the fact that part of the journey of sanctification for you could be some difficult days and probably will be according to James 1, but he will be with you every step of the way, and he is always good.